Obituary.
Thomas Neff. The physicist who rid the world of a third of its nuclear warheads died on July 11th, aged 80.
Crouching under his school desk as he had been instructed, Thomas Neff listened to the sirens wailing. This was a nuclear attack drill, aka duck and cover. The giant threat of the Soviet Union was a constant in those days. All through grade school and high school, he had those drills. But Portland, Oregon, was a remote, blue-collar place back then, and he was just a teacher's son who was happy to earn extra nickels by picking strawberries and beans. Why would the Soviets attack him, and how could it do any good to hide under his desk? In October 1991, at a meeting of American and Russian officials on nuclear disarmament, he asked himself much the same question. The first arms control agreement, START 1, had just been signed. The Russians, amid the chaos of the collapsing Soviet Union, were protesting that they were broke and could not afford to dismantle their warheads. The Americans did not trust them to do so. Since the Russians could not even pay the wages of workers in their nuclear plants, the nightmare now was that some starving workers might go rogue, selling nuclear material to North Korea or Iran. The Americans wanted to monitor the dismantling, but obviously, Dr. Neff thought, the Russians would not open their plants to a lot of spies. The two sides were talking past each other. What good could that do? Besides, he had a better idea. Its basis was not politics, but economics. The Russians were desperate for hard cash. America needed uranium to power its civilian nuclear plants. If the Russians diluted the highly enriched uranium in their warheads down to commercial strength by adding more natural uranium, America could buy it with trade credits. The time was right, with world uranium prices soft. It could be done gradually without flooding the market. Once Russia had a financial motive, it would want to keep those warheads safe. Swords into plowshares, darkness to electric light. Or, as he put it, we'll trade you this thing you're interested in for this other thing we're interested in. The idea was so good, he felt sure it would work. And over two decades, it did. By 2013, when the last of 250 shipments of Russian uranium arrived in Baltimore, more than 20,000 warheads had been eliminated, around a third of the peak global number. The Russians had earned $17 billion in credits for food and essentials. The fuel they supplied, 15,000 tons of low-enriched uranium, was enough to power the whole United States for 2 years. And hardly anyone knew. At MIT, where he researched nuclear energy and solar power from 1977 onwards, most of his colleagues had no idea. For him, it was a bit like spycraft. At that October meeting, he said nothing publicly, but lingered in the corridor to waylay Viktor Mikhailov, deputy minister of the Soviet Atomic Energy Ministry. Mikhailov, acting independently, called all the shots on nuclear power. He was, as usual, smoking. Through the fog, Dr. Neff asked him if he had any uranium to sell. "How much?" came the reply. 500 tons? I think I can do it." Later, he thought he could have asked for 700 tons. Mikhailov liked a deal, and the sales revenue would be, in effect, his ministry's budget. But 500 would do. By next April, clutching Mikhailov's card, but with no appointment, he got smoothly into the foreign ministry in Moscow. You could do that in those days. He visited nuclear plants, too, finding the workers there dedicated and disciplined, as little else in Russia was. It was a fine moment for a man with a plan, which he christened Megatons to Megawatts. Nonetheless, it soon became a tangle. The Russians were mostly keen, though some complained that the nuclear warheads were heritage that should not be destroyed. The Americans were much less eager, wondering why on earth they should help the enemy. Some called it crazy. Chaos reigned on one side, inertia on the other. He wrote op-eds and countless memos, pushing, but the arrangement was not signed until 1993 and not implemented until 1994. He drafted much of the legislation himself, pushing more. Meanwhile, he kept in close touch with Mikhailov, including helping him to write a letter to the State Department endorsing the plan. Above all, he tried to ensure that Russia was treated fairly. The U.S. Enrichment Corporation, the agency that bought uranium to distribute to America's power plants, often would not use the Russian uranium and refused to pay for it. In that event, the shipments stopped, Mikhailov exploded, and Dr. Neff found himself on yet another flight east. Luckily, he was well cut out for this work. He could get on with anybody and everybody, and tended to see the good in people. There were also few who knew more about nuclear energy. His start in physics had been slow and self-taught, in way over his head at Stanford, until he spent a summer drumming the textbooks into his brain. But soon, nuclear and solar energy became his field. With that expert credential, he helped to draft the legislation setting up President Nixon's new energy department, and in 1984 wrote a book on the state of the world uranium market. Quite by chance, from 1972, he was also executive assistant to the president of the American Physics Society, who, because he did not have time for government meetings, sent him along instead. This was the best thing that ever happened to him. First, it made him buy a suit. Second, it put him at the heart of national science policy, and, on that October day, face to face with Russians, too. Working in groups, however, was not his forte. He liked the nimbleness of being a free agent, virtually unknown, spotting things that could be fixed. Of course, anyone could do that. But the trick then was to seize those moments and actually do something. The fall of the Soviet Union, once the overwhelming enemy, was a huge chance, and he was there at the right time. He had a good plan and never stopped believing in it. That way, more or less alone, he moved nuclear mountains.